In the last section, we talked about how the bones form, either through intramembranous or through endochondral ossification. And next, I want to talk about how the bones will then change throughout the lifetime, because obviously the bones of your skeleton have grown since you were a fetus. So they grow both in length and also in thickness or in width. And the way that they continue to grow in length is that keep in mind that you've got ossification happening from the center of the bone, where the bone marrow cavity would be, towards the ends of the bone. And then you've also got those secondary ossification centers that are in the epiphyses of the bone. And as they continue to grow, they continue to deposit bone both towards the center of the bone and then upward or towards the away from the center of the bone. And so as these two, actually three centers, because you've got one in the middle of the shaft of the bone, and then you've got two, one in each epiphyses of the bone. As these continue to deposit bone material and slowly use up the cartilage that was originally there, they increase the length of the bones. And in fact, we stop growing when these growth centers finally use up the last of that cartilage that was left over from the very beginning of the development of our bones. And when that happens, we can no longer grow in length or the bones can no longer grow in length. And and the effect, of course, of that on us is that we stop getting taller. When that cartilage is used up, it forms what's called an ephesial line, which you can actually see in an X-ray. And I believe that Martini has a picture called Bone Growth at the Ephesial Cartilage, which shows the bones of a young child that has not completed growth. And you can actually see the little bands of cartilage at the ends of the bone, and an adult who has. And you can see the ephesial lines where that cartilage has been completely used up. So bones also increase in diameter, and when they do this, it's called oppositional growth. And what's going to happen in the case of oppositional growth, it is diagrammed very nicely in Martini. It's called, as you might expect, oppositional bone growth, and it shows how blood vessels along the outer surface of the bone are slowly engulfed or encased by new osteons. And those blood vessels become the central canals of new osteons. And, as those osteons are developed, it increases the diameter of the bone. All right, couple things to think about with bones. I want to point out that bones are highly vascularized. They have a good blood supply. And the reason for that is because there are a lot of active cells moving around within your bones. You've got the osteoblasts, you've got the osteoclasts, and of course you've got those more stationary osteocytes that are located in the lacuna. So all of those cells are going to require a blood supply to bring them oxygen and nutrients and to take away waste products. There's also nerve supply, primarily in the periosteum, which is the membrane that surrounds the bone. And this is why if you break a bone, there's going to be some pain involved. I want to point out the dynamic nature of bone. I think at least when I was learning about anatomy and physiology in high school, I always thought of the bones as being sort of static. You know, they grow to a certain size and shape, and they pretty much stay that way for the rest of your life. But that's not true. Your bones are constantly remodeling themselves. They're constantly breaking down the older bone tissue and replacing it with new tissue. And the result of this is that your bones, your skeleton is constantly being replaced. And even when you're 90 years old, your bones, your oldest bone tissue might only be 20 years old. So it keeps the bones in a state of youth, which is important because if the bone tissue gets too old, it starts to lose some of its characteristics, which allow it to function so wonderfully. So keep in mind that new matrix is being made all the time. Another characteristic or property of this dynamic nature of the bone is that, again, minerals can be released into the bloodstream or absorbed from the bloodstream to adjust the mineral and electrolyte levels of the bloodstream fairly easily. And so that's an important characteristic of this as well. Some other features or situations that can change the bone: as we exercise, as we do any kind of activity that puts strain on the bones, it encourages the osteoblasts. And what that does is, if the osteoblasts are working overtime, so to speak, it starts to increase our bone density. Bones become thicker and stronger. They become less brittle. And it should also be pointed out that inactivity can lead to brittleness of bones. They become less dense. There's less activity of the osteoclasts and the osteoblasts. Different types of exercise, putting your strain on certain parts, certain muscles, and therefore onto certain bones and certain parts of bones, will actually change the shape of the bones. And I think I mentioned earlier that, for example, anthropologists and archaeologists who look at ancient skeletons that have been unearthed can sometimes discern information about what kinds of activities the person did. For example, if you think about the skeleton of a blacksmith who's spending 8 to 10 hours a day pounding with a heavy mallet or a heavy hammer, they're going to have a very distinctive, they're going to have massive muscles in their arms, and that's going to affect the shape and the density of their arm bones. So, other things that can have an effect are nutrition, and that's probably most people know that to some extent. A lot of times when people think of nutrition for the bones or for the skeleton, the first thing they think about is calcium. But I want to point out that there are other very important minerals that are important to bone production. And these can include some phosphate salts, magnesium, fluoride plays a role, manganese, iron. And also, I want to point out vitamin D plays an important role in the ability of the skeleton to use calcium and to incorporate that into some of the matrix tissues. Hormones are going to play a role. I also want to point out that as far as nutrition is concerned, protein is important, because remember, a third of the bone matrix is made up of collagen protein, and so it's important for there to be enough protein available for that. Again, the skeleton acts as a calcium reserve. You can almost think of it as like a calcium bank. Bones can store excess calcium, or keeping it out of the blood if the calcium levels are too high in the blood. Or if calcium levels are too low in the blood, the bones can actually release calcium at their own expense to increase those levels in the blood. And we haven't talked about it yet, but calcium is very important for a variety of functions in the body, including nervous function, muscle function, etc. So it's important to keep those levels of calcium in the blood at appropriate level so that the body has access to that calcium that is needed. I want to talk about two of the hormones that are involved in allowing the skeleton to act as a calcium reserve. These are two hormones that act in opposition to each other. So one of them is going to encourage the bones to absorb calcium, and the other one is going to encourage the bones to give up calcium. These two hormones are parathyroid hormone and calcitonin. And parathyroid hormone has the effect of causing the bones to release calcium. And, if there were too much parathyroid hormone, the bones could actually become deficient in calcium. So a couple things that the parathyroid hormone does is it causes the osteoclasts to release more calcium from the bone. And whenever you think of something, you know, okay, osteoclasts are releasing calcium from the bone, well, then your next question needs to be, okay, where is that calcium going? And the answer is that it's going into the bloodstream. So Parathyroid hormone is going to have the effect by encouraging the osteoclasts of increasing calcium in the blood but decreasing calcium in the bone. Another thing that parathyroid hormone does is it causes your kidneys to conserve calcium, which, again, the short-term effect of that is going to keep more calcium in the blood. Now, eventually, that's going to benefit the bones because, you know, if you're conserving calcium, that eventually will be available for the bones, but only if whatever it is that was causing the calcium levels to be low in the blood to begin with is corrected. Another thing that parathyroid hormone does is it triggers an increase in the absorption of calcium out of the intestines. So it allows your body to absorb more calcium from the food you eat. And that, again, its short-term effect, at least, is to increase the calcium in the blood. Now, the other hormone that works in opposition to parathyroid hormone, it's involved with this calcium balance, is called calcitonin. And, for example, if calcium levels are too high in the blood, calcitonin does a couple of things. The first thing it does is it inhibits osteoclasts. So in other words, it reduces the activity of the osteoclasts, which keeps that calcium in the bone instead of having it be released into the blood. And it also increases the calcium excretion by the kidneys. So it causes your kidneys to get rid of any extra calcium that might be in the blood. So keep in mind, when you're thinking about calcium and you're thinking about how it's moving between the blood and the bones, try to think of it as an either or, that if the calcium is in the blood, it's usually at the expense of the bones. If it's in the bones, it's at the expense of the blood, at least in terms of the adjustments. And that might help you to kind of wrap your mind around how these two hormones work in opposition to keep the calcium levels where they need to be. Now, bones are pretty good at repairing themselves, and they do go through a set of steps that they generally follow when they are repairing themselves from a fracture, for example. And I believe that there are a series of figures in your textbook, and in fact there are, called Steps in the Repair of a Fracture. And the I recommend also the Discovery Channel movie called Broken Bones and How They Mend, because it does a really nice job of outlining this process. And I'm going to go over the steps briefly. However, again, this is something that you might learn a little easier by looking at the pictures and the diagrams, just because it's kind of hard to describe it verbally. But during the first step, there's going to be a lot of bleeding because blood vessels have been severed. And the first thing that will happen is that a hematoma is going to form, which is basically a giant blood clot. And the formation of this hematoma is actually going to disrupt circulation to some extent. It's also going to kill many of the osteocytes that are around the break. So there's going to be some continued damage during this first step. During the second step, cells from the periosteum, which again is that membrane that surrounds the bone, and also from the endosteum, which is the membrane that lines the marrow cavity, are going to, these cells are going to turn into osteoblasts, and they're going to form a network of spongy bone in that hematoma. So they're going to move through that hematoma and turn it into spongy bone, eventually forming what's called a callus of cartilage and bone. And this callus will be an enlarged area, and it will actually stabilize the area. It'll kind of stabilize the ends of the bone so that they don't move around within the body, and to also help you to gain some mobility again. And then step three, the cartilage in this external callus is going to turn to bone. And number four, this usually takes about a year, But the swelling in the bone, this callus, is actually not, it's not beneficial in the long run, because what it could do in the future is prevent the bone from breaking in the most advantageous spot. And so what will happen over the next year, and this is step four again, is that the osteoblasts and the osteoclasts will come in and they'll remodel that callus to back to what the bone was originally.